Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand and Jill Robbins. Later, you will hear the final part of A Princess of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs in American Stories. But first, scientists say that the brains of animals and humans risk severe damage without blood flow and oxygen. But researchers say they were able to restore some activity in the brains of pigs that had been killed 4 hours earlier. Nanad Sestan of the Yale School of Medicine in New Haven, Connecticut, was one of the researchers. He said, by medical definitions, the brains were not living brains. He added that the brains could not think or sense anything. The researchers, however, found that cells within brains that have lost their supply of blood and oxygen could survive longer than scientists had believed. They said the research might lead to new medical treatments for stroke and other conditions. It also provides a new way to study the brain and how drugs work in it. The research was supported mostly by the National Institutes of Health and published this week in the journal Nature. The 32 brains in the study came from pigs that had been killed for food. The scientists put the brains into a device in their lab. 4 hours after the animals died, they began pumping a specially designed blood substitute through the organs. After 6 hours, scientists found that individual brain cells in one area of the brain had continued to keep important details of their structure. And when they sent electric signals to the brains, the cells responded in a way that showed viability. The scientists studied the artificial blood before and after it entered the treated brains. They found the brain cells were absorbing blood sugar and oxygen and producing carbon dioxide, a signal that they were working. They also found that blood pathways in treated brains reacted to a drug that makes them wider. But the brains did not show large amounts of activity that would be a sign of consciousness. The scientist said restoring consciousness was not the goal of the study, and they do not know whether it is possible. The scientist said they had no plans to try their methods on human brains at this time. However, they are now looking to keep the study for longer than 6 hours of treatment. Christoph Koch is president of the Allen Institute for Brain Science in Seattle, Washington. He did not take part in the study, but he said he was surprised by the results, especially since they came from such a large animal. He said the study could increase our knowledge to bring people back to the land of the living after a drug overdose. He suggested it also could help with treatments for when the brain has not received enough oxygen for an hour or two. Koch said the results of the study also raised questions about the widely used definition of death, the irreversible loss of brain activity.
Arturo Balbino works as a builder in Texas. On a recent day, he walked into the U.S. consulate in the northern Mexican border town of Ciudad Juarez for his visa interview. He was not fearful of the process. He felt good. Balbino, a 33-year-old Mexican national, entered the United States illegally 14 years ago. He believed he had a strong chance of receiving a spousal visa. His wife and children are all U.S. citizens. His wife's father promised to support him financially if necessary. His employer wrote a letter promising him a job. The interview process was the final step to legalization. He hoped it would lead to a better life for him and his family. Instead, the consular officer denied him a visa, saying he might possibly need money from American taxpayers to survive. That decision left Balbino in Mexico indefinitely. Reporters with the Reuters news agency examined the documents related to Balbino's case. More and more immigrants, especially Mexicans, are being denied visas. The denials are based on decisions by the U.S. State Department that they might become public charges. A public charge is someone who is dependent on the government for support. Official information, research, and interviews with lawyers for some immigrants say consular officers are denying visas even when immigrants fulfill legal requirements, proving they have enough money to support themselves. The refusals can trap people for months or even longer outside the United States. This means they are separated from their American spouses and children. And it means they must restart the long and difficult process of requesting a visa. One reason for the rise in denials is little-known changes made to the State Department's Foreign Affairs Manual last year. The changes gave diplomats greater power to deny visas using the public charge reason. Some critics say the new manual permits diplomats to tighten immigration policy without considering public opinion. The State Department is trying to bypass public comment and implement changes to public charge policy all on its own, said Charles Wheeler, a lawyer with the Catholic Legal Immigration Network. The State Department would not comment, saying it is fighting legal action against the new manual in courts. Immigration lawyers said the public charge denial happens a lot at the U.S. consulate in Ciudad Juarez. That is where all Mexican immigrant visa requests are processed. Mexicans received 11% fewer immigrant visas in 2018 compared to 2017. In the past, the State Department usually accepted a letter signed by an American citizen offering to act as a sponsor for the immigrant as proof of financial support. In Balbino's case, his wife's father provided that letter, but Balbino's request was still denied. Balbino's wife Darlene is considering moving with all of her children to Balbino's hometown in the Mexican state of Guanajuato. She does not work and is struggling to pay her family's living costs. "We can't make it on our own anymore," she said. Because the family is so poor, two of the couple's five children have already been sent to live with Balbino. the children have found the move difficult. They've spent their whole lives in the United States, Balbino said. They don't speak much Spanish. Today, Balbino is considering the possibility that his family will be apart for years. At times, I want to think that everything will be okay, and I'll be able to be with my family again, he said. It is very difficult to think that I won't be able to return to watch my children grow up. I'm Susan Shand.
Jordan Peele is an African-American filmmaker. His newest movie, Us, is the second most popular movie released in 2019 so far. The first movie he directed, Get Out, won an Academy Award in 2018. Critics and movie watchers say the black horror films that he creates show us examples of social, economic, and racial injustice. Us explores the monster hiding within ourselves in the form of the evil doppelganger, or double. Award-winning actress Lupita Nyong'o plays two characters in Us. One is Adelaide Wilson, a middle-class mother and wife. The other character is Red, her troubling double. Nyong'o says that her character, Adelaide, cannot explain the trouble she faced in her childhood, but it still causes problems for her. The character thinks that something bad is going to happen at the family's summer home. Her feelings come true when four people appear at the house and terrible events begin. Peele says his work uses the idea of the shadow self,
which comes up in many cultures, many mythologies, and it tends to be this sense that there is a darker self that we suppress, and we suppress it because we are afraid of what it means, and it holds our guilts and our evil.
Peele said the horror movies permit him to talk about race relations and the growing social and economic divisions in America. His earlier horror film, Get Out, was about wealthy old white people extending their lives by having their brains moved into young black people. Us is about how poor Americans relate to wealthier Americans. Sean McKittrick is a producer of Us. It's more about what we've become as a country, he said, and shows punishment for how people act to each other. It is all centered around how a family deals with being attacked by themselves. Nyong'o said that often
we feel that the monster is from outside of ourselves. You know, they're from outside our borders and, you know, outside our homes. But in this story, the monster is really within our very selves. And it's about embracing that, you know, or at least recognizing it.
Horror film expert Andrew Scale said Peele represents black horror movies today.
Yeah, I think we're in an incredibly exciting time for horror right now.
For example, in George Romero's famous 1968 horror movie, Night of the Living Dead, the monsters killed black actors within the first 10 minutes, or the black actors stayed alive long enough to save white leading characters. Now, he said, Hill includes Black actors as the main characters who are here to stay.
And Jordan Peele has said that he doesn't plan on casting a white actor in a lead role from here on out because that movie's been done.
Scales said the idea of the monster within is very old, and so is using horror to talk about social issues. Scale added that in the horror films young people are making today, the actors cannot easily identify the deadly force or control it. He said, the ideas we find in us suggest that young people worry about losing control of their social, economic, and environmental well-being. In addition, they have trouble trying to change the system. Peel is involved in another project, an update of a 1960s television series, The Twilight Zone. This series is on the CBS web streaming service. Peel is the host of the series and tells the stories as a narrator. The Rotten Tomatoes movie rating website says, The Twilight Zone explores the strangeness of the modern world. I'm Jill Robbins.
Now, the special English program, American Stories.
The huge green warrior Tars Tarkas came slowly toward me with his thin sword. I backed away. I did not want to fight him. I did not wish his death. He had been as kind to me as a green Martian can be. As I stood watching him, a rifle fired in the distance. Then another. And another. Tars Tarkas and his warriors were under attack from another tribe of green warriors. Within seconds, a terrible battle raged. As I watched, three of the attackers fell on Tars Tarkas. He killed one and was fighting with the other two when he slipped and fell. I ran to his aid, swinging my sword. He was on his feet. Shoulder to shoulder, we fought against the attackers. They finally withdrew after an hour of fierce fighting.
John Carter, I think I understand the meaning of the word friend. You saved my life when I was about to take yours. From this day, you are no longer a captive among our people, but a leader and great warrior among us.
There was a smile on his face. Once again, he took off a metal band from his arm and gave it to me.
I have a question for you, John Carter. I understand why you took the Red Woman with you. But why did Sola leave her people and go with you?
She did not want to see me or the princess harmed. She does not like the great games held by your people where captives are led to die. She knows if she is caught, she too will die in the games. She told me she hates the games because her mother died there.
What? How could she know her mother?
She told me her mother was killed in the games because she had hidden the egg that produced her. Her mother hid Sola among other children before she was captured. Sola said she was a kind woman, not like others of your tribe. Tars Tarkas grew angry as I was speaking, but I could see past his anger. I could see pain in his eyes. I immediately knew Sola's great secret. I have a question for you, Tars Tarkas. Did you know Sola's mother?
Yes, and if I could have, I would have prevented her death. I know this story to be true. I have always known the woman who died in those games had a child. I never knew the child. I do now. Sola is also my child.
For 3 days, we followed the trail left by the Princess Deja Torres, Sola, and poor, ugly Wula. At last, we could see them in the distance. Their animal could no longer be ridden. They were talking. When we came near, Wula turned to fight us. I slowly walked to him with my hand out. Sola was standing nearby. She was armed and prepared to fight. The princess was lying next to her feet. Sola, what is wrong with the princess?
She has been crying much these past few days, John Carter. We believed you died so we could escape. The thought of your death was very heavy on this woman, my friend Deja Thoris. Come and tell her you are among the living. Perhaps that will stop her crying.
I walked to where the Princess Deja Thoris was lying on the ground. She looked at me with eyes that were red from crying. Princess, you are no longer in danger. Tars Tarkas has come with me as a friend. He and his warriors will help to see you safely home. And Sola, I would have you greet your father, Tars Tarkas, a great leader among your people. Your secret no longer means death to anyone. He already knows you are his daughter. The two of you have nothing to fear. Sola turned and looked at Tars Tarkas. She held out her hand. He took it. It was a new beginning for them.
I know our world has never before seen anyone like you, John Carter. Can it be that all Earthmen are like you? I was alone, a stranger, hunted, threatened. Yet you would freely give your life to save me. You come to me now with a tribe of green warriors who offer their friendship. You are no longer a captive, but wear the medal of great rank among their people. No man has ever done this.
Princess, I have done many strange things in my life, many things much smarter men would not have done. And now, before my courage fails, I would ask you to be mine in marriage. She smiled at me for a moment, and then her dark eyes flashed in the evening light.
You have no need of your courage, John Carter, because you already knew the answer before you asked the question.
Several days later, we reached the city of Helium. At first, the red men of Helium thought we were an attacking army. But they soon saw their princess. We were greeted with great joy. Tars Tarkas and his green warriors caused the greatest excitement. This huge group of green warriors entered the city as friends and allies. I soon met Tardos Mors, the grandfather of Dejah Thoris. He tried several times to thank me for saving the life of the princess, but tears filled his eyes, and he could not speak. For 9 years, I served in the government and fought in the armies of Helium as a prince of the royal family. It was a happy time. The Princess Dejah Thoris and I were expecting a child. Then, one day, a soldier returned from a long flight. When he landed, he hurried to the great meeting room. Tardos Mors met with the soldier and reported that every creature on the planet had but 3 days to live. He said the great machines that produced the atmosphere on the planet had stopped producing oxygen. He said no one knew why this had happened, but there was nothing that could be done. The air grew thin within a day. Many people could do nothing but sleep. I watched as my princess was slowly dying. I had to try something. I could still move with great difficulty. I went to our airport and chose a fast aircraft. I flew as fast as I could to the building that produced the atmosphere of the planet. Workers were trying to enter. I tried to help. With a great effort, I opened a hole. I grew very weak. I asked one of the workers if he could start the engines. He said he would try. I fell asleep on the ground. It was dark when I opened my eyes again. My clothing felt stiff and strange. I sat up. I could see light from an opening. I walked outside. The land looked strange to me. I looked up to the sky and saw the red planet Mars. I was once again on Earth in the desert of Arizona. I cried out with deep emotion. Did the worker reach the machines to renew the atmosphere? Did the air reach the people of that planet in time to save them? Was my Princess Dejah Thoris alive, or did she lie cold in death? For 10 years now, I have watched the night sky looking for an answer. I believe she and our child are waiting there for me. Something tells me that I shall soon know.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.